Welcome to Day Zero Update for March 22nd, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news as we've, I don't know if there was a major event or anything, but we had a bunch of stuff get dates.
Yeah.
As well as a bunch of other news, some layoffs here and there.
Mm-hmm.
As well as one of the lawsuits we talked about a bunch last year has finally come to a head. Still may not be over, but we'll see. As well as NVIDIA was kind of the main character of the week.
Yep.
For their new DLSS tech.
Mm-hmm.
That nobody liked.
Yep.
So we'll get to all of that stuff here in a bit. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've still been playing more MLB The Show 26. Still enjoying that a lot. Messing around with different things, working my way through the career mode with my version of Peggy Hill, who's getting better. The thing I didn't do intentionally is her number is 18, so she's Peggy 18.
Mm-hmm.
Reference to the EU rating system. That was a fun little bit I realized at some point afterwards, but I'm also been working my way through the franchise mode, mostly using the system that they added last year that lets you kind of set the importance level of the moments you want to jump into.
Mm-hmm.
So it can jump into, you know, early moments or later moments in the game, things of certain importance levels, a decent amount of options. I kind of wish you could just tell to keep going through games that way when you say to, get me to the next game. Because it requires you to keep hitting it over and over again each time. Maybe the one knock I have so far in franchise mode. But still been enjoying that a lot. I'm working my way through some of the Diamond Dynasty stuff as they have a bunch of cards for players that were in the World Baseball Classic, some of which are also in the MLB, and others that may not be. I'm not 100% sure exactly where all these players are from, but neat seeing a lot of a good variety of players from different countries around the world for that. So that's been nice. But yeah, that's been kind of it for that game. The new game I checked out this week was The Seven Deadly Sins Origin, which is the new anime gacha game on PS5, PC, and mobile. I think it'll be mobile later this week coming up. But I played it on PS5, and I guess it takes place after the anime, because the character you're playing as initially is like talking about this big battle that I assume is something that happens later in the show. I don't know for sure because I've never seen it. Go to this place that is essentially a big crater after this big battle happens, and you kind of find your way into like these caverns underneath that leads you to finding this like mysterious object that, in the process of trying to work your way back out, you end up sort of restoring this this crater back into the lake that it used to be. With water and life and all that kind of stuff. And you start wondering, like, what the heck's going on here? Because you eventually work your way back to the town that is nearby, and you end up having, I guess, one of the major characters who died protecting the city ends up rampaging through the city. You sort of are the ones to stop them, or at least hit them enough that you kind of knock them out of this state, and then sort of end up in a weird scenario, kind of continue to wonder, like, what's going on here with all of this, kind of realizing that you're now part of some big thing that's happening here, probably tied to this, like, pendant thing that you picked up. So they, you know, talk to the king, and they come up with some plan for this, but the they were not going to have you go along with it because you're still kids, I think like teens. But the pendant will not leave your hand. It's just kind of stuck. They have a very sword into stone kind of moment. Somebody tries to rip it out of their hands and it just never budges. So you end up having to go do things, and where I left off was sort of heading in that direction, but running to a bunch of other stuff. But yeah, this has a lot in common with, you know, your Genshin Impact and all the various other games that have aped that style of game. But this one, I would say, feels like the clunkiest of them all. Similarly, like, you can climb up walls in that very kind of Breath of the Wild style way. But here, it's very picky about that stuff. And the animation just looks pretty bad. It just looks like maybe climbing a ladder animation, but you're climbing up, you know, the sides of these cliffs and whatnot. Mm. The combat's pretty decent for what it is. And so they have you go through some pulls early on to get an extra character. And just from other things I had from setting up the account and all that, I had enough for some more pulls. So end up getting a full crew of four characters. You swap between them with the D-pad. So you're kind of encouraged to do that like in the middle of combat, because then it gets you like a more powerful attack they will do as they come into play. And all that. And yeah, it's kind of all that. It's got the same kind of event system and dailies and all that kind of stuff to do. Which is interesting. They do have gliders in this, but it does not control well at all. It will only turn left or right to the amount that the screen allows. You can't necessarily do like a big U-turn or anything like that. You'd have to turn the camera to be able to keep turning left or right. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you just hit a like max degree of turn that you can do. So it's almost like you have like a 90 degrees of turning from left to right. And it's like, yeah, this doesn't feel good at all. Sometimes it just doesn't activate when I think it should. Or if I'm like trying to jump off a cliff to activate it to glide across a gap or whatever, it just doesn't work the way it should. So yeah, this seems like the worst one of these that I've played so far. It's the only one that doesn't have English PO in it. It has subtitles, Japanese subtitles, but not any English. Or it has subtitles for the Japanese, but no English dub to it. Which does let you, you know, have it automatically progress through dialogue as it does it and all that. It's also pretty easy to skip through it as you go, because there's a good bit of talking early on, but yeah, it's one of those. It's an okay one of those, but it's not as good as Genshin Impact or any of that other stuff. But I'm sure you'll unlock a bunch of characters from the game or from the show at some point. I got a few and had one that was pretty interesting. She was like a fire person that has, I think, a lance that shoots fireballs. Mm-hmm. But for your ultimate, she goes into this different form where she almost turns into like a bit of a monster and is able to just shoot fireballs at a distance to anything around you. The lock-on is pretty generous with the way it locks onto things, so she can kind of lock onto things at a distance, and I was just end up just killing a bunch of stuff just because it's a time thing. It lasts for like 20 or 30 seconds, it feels like. So mm-hmm. have plenty of time, just go and just kill a bunch of stuff and maybe get some materials out of it to, you know, cook things or craft things or whatever you need to do. So yeah, it's one of those. PS5 PC right now, and I think mobile comes online maybe later this week, maybe the 24th or 25th. But that one's an all right one. And then the last game I've been playing some of is Power Wash Simulator 2, because they put out, alongside a big update, the first of the free stages they're putting into this game, as part of the Caldera Chronicles line of story stuff, which is a miniature village. I think it's called Nutsville. And yeah, it's story wise, it's this guy that has created this miniature village out of a bunch of what he claims are natural materials, you know, wood and beans and all this other stuff he talks about over the course of you working on it. But claims that in the process of making this, he has upset Bigfoot, and that Bigfoot has created a huge mess all over this thing, so that you're hired to go and clean it. So it's a bit of a weird story as a result. But yeah, it's a neat area. Kind of like if you have this big spread of this, like, I don't know how you describe it, maybe more medieval kind of style, because there's a big castle in it with a bunch of districts around it, and then some farmland and all that. And there's river and water, like a harbor, that once you start cleaning off, you see, like, there's extra detail under the water, like sunken treasure chests and sunken boats and all that kind of stuff under there that is pretty neat. Yeah, that took a couple hours to clean and was a really nice new stage to play ahead of the Adventure Time stuff. That'll be showing up here April 7th, I believe. So I'm ready for some more of that. And that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Amongst basically the games I've been really playing mostly this week, Splatoon 3, still, as usual. I've essentially made that a nightly ritual now. And I've been focusing more on the Salmonid Run parts of the game, because I had been neglecting that for a while and decided it was time to go back into that and actually commit to it. And it ended up helping out, because I managed to get some really good gear out of it. But the Salmonid Run stuff, I've talked before about how this game is just wildly unbalanced, and you kind of just have to embrace that when you decide to play it. And the Salmonid Run stuff is the best example of all of that, because there are basically, the way the Salmonid Run works is you and three other players are put onto these artificial islands that are made of, like, old oil derricks and stuff like that. And you are given the job to collect these golden salmonid eggs. Now, the regular salmonid eggs are the orange ones. They're used as the currency in this game. But the golden ones are the ones that you essentially have to collect. You're given, like, a quota that you have to do, and you go through, like, three different phrases, each one with their own quota. Now, you and the other three players are all given a weapon and a random weapon and a random, like, power-up move. You can end up getting, like, a really good weapon, or you can get a really lousy weapon. It really is completely random and depends. But, like, the thing is, depending on how the game decides to run, you can either end up with a fairly easy run with some pretty quality weapons, or a really insanely hard and unfair one with really shitty weapons. And, of course, keep in mind, you're also playing with three other people, and, you know, there is no, like, team speak on this, so... Yeah. And the thing is, the only way you can get those golden eggs is by killing the boss salmonids. And those things come in a bunch of different forms. A lot of them you'll eventually find out they kind of cribbed to make a bunch of the enemies in the side order DLC. There's, like, one where it's, like, a bunch of salmonids that fly around carrying this huge tower that, like, sprays stuff on you. There's another one that's, like, a sniper that's shooting, like, a continuous line of goop at you from, like, on, like, a whole huge tower of pots and pans. Stuff like that. And You know, it's when it works really well, and it's a lot of fun. When it doesn't work, it sucks. But I've been playing that, and also Mio Memories in Orbit. I actually finished this game days ago. My review is up on Smashpad for anybody who is interested. But as is the case with games, a lot like games like this, there's actually two endings, and I'm wanting to get the true ending. And it's also as the case with a lot of those games, in order to get the true ending, there's a bunch of random bullshit that you have to do that involves you backtracking, getting stuff, and then trying to find other stuff, and then going through this area called the Crucible, which has the two most single most difficult platforming challenges in the entire game. Like there is no comparison. It is insanely difficult. I dedicated a whole hour trying to get past one of those last night, and I only managed to get about halfway. So yeah, it's difficult, but this game will not defeat me. I am bound and determined to do it. So, that's what I've been playing. So, Danrib, what about you?
I haven't been playing a whole lot, mainly because I've just been focusing on stuff that we have out of GDC, and then I'm going to PAX East in a couple days, so there's that. The one game that I have been playing that I can definitely talk about is Mr. Sleepy Man. This is an indie game that came out a couple weeks ago. I was actually supposed to be the one to review it, but I ended up just giving that review to Mike just because of how busy I was. And yeah, it is a very different platformer. It controls nice. It looks nice. It has a hell of a soundtrack, but it's also archaic in ways that make it feel a little too different for its own good. After reading Michael's review, I kind of agree with him. The main thing that you do in this game, among many things, is be annoying. Kind of like Untitled Goose Game in that nature. And when you combine that with like nice platforming mechanics, it becomes fun in its own right. But the main thing that troubled me as far as clicking with it is that there's a lot of hidden stuff that you can do and that the game expects you to just find, and there's really like no way to actually do that. Like, for example, there's one part of the game where, I mean, not really one part, but there's one expectation from the game where you have to die, and the game isn't difficult enough where I'm gonna say that you're guaranteed to die. Like, there are parts where, like, you make enough mistakes, you'll die eventually, but like there's enough maneuverability from your character to just avoid that outright. But when you die, I'm not gonna say it's like it's like a roguelike game where it actually helps you. That's not the case. It's actually written into the narrative for you to be able to do something else. But most of this stuff is actually encapsulated in, a couple worlds and in various different scenarios. And a lot of that just felt really unconnected, even though like circumstances will allow you to find some of this stuff out eventually. One inside baseball thing is when I was given this review code, I was also given like a combination of what was a review guide as well as a walkthrough. A review guide is typically like commonplace when you get a game early, but a walkthrough right away is definitely out of the ordinary. So after I had gone through it, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, this is why I didn't vibe with this. And it was a really interesting thing. Mike gave it a 3.5. I probably would have given it a 3 or maybe even lower, just based on what I've played. But that being said, like, it didn't lack for fun. The game had good platforming and whatnot. It all just felt disjointed to a point where it took a lot. It took away from a lot of the fun I had. And when you compare it to other games like, Big Hops and Demon Tides, two, superb platformers that came out this year. We have Bubsy 4D coming out in a few months that I'll talk about in a little bit. And yeah, like it's just tough, especially with how competitive it's gotten, even in the indie space. So there's that. Anyway, to just move on to a bunch of the previews that I do want to highlight. I played over 30 games at GDC. I've written 8 so far. I'm not gonna preview all 30 because just 'cause, that's not a good use of our time, and our hits really aren't worth that kind of effort. But before GDC, I was invited to Capcom to play Pragmata one more time. And they let me play for 2 hours, and basically they gave me full reins of the entire second level. If you watch the latest Pragmata trailer, where they pretty much are in this place that looks like New York. That was the level, and I was really, really impressed by it. I've never actually seen that trailer before yesterday, and I was like, oh, they actually showed more than I thought they would. And for those that haven't tried any of the demos, the gameplay is just awesome. You know, in order to really inflict any damage on any enemies, you have to solve a grid-based puzzle using the face buttons on the right side as directional buttons, and I found that to be pretty fun. You know, Brandon said like he was sold on it quite later, and I'm like, yeah, like this game has the sauce. It's going to be awesome. And the game is actually level-based, so when you go through these levels, throughout different key parts, you'll also be able to find ladders back to your base, and in this base is where you can actually bond with Diana, who's the little blonde character you interact with, and you know, you're able to give her some gifts, you're able to talk about various customs on Earth and things like that. But it's also the place for you to upgrade your weapons, upgrade your other gear, and do other things that really humanize both Hugh and Diana. And I don't really know what this game is about aside from what I saw in the trailer. It seems that Hugh wants to bring Diana back to Earth, or, you know, I don't know if she's ever even been there or where she's come from, but yeah, there's a lot of those aspects there. And yeah, like, Capcom looks like, you know, they're hitting on all cylinders with this one. It's coming out a week ahead of what they said during the Game Awards. So yeah, this is now my most anticipated game of the year, and I can't wait to play more. The main big thing that was in this demo were enemies that required you to actually shoot it before you hack into them. Like, for example, there's this one almost AT-AT looking robot that all of a sudden sprouts out these red force fields, and when the force fields are up, you can't actually hack anymore. If Diana even tries to hack, like, she becomes like paralyzed for a little bit and you can't use her, so you have to just rely on your own ability. And the way to do that is to actually shoot at the red force fields that are there. And by shooting them and getting rid of them, you're also getting rid of them from the grid, so that you're able to go ahead and, you know, move your cursor to the middle or wherever you have to put it in order to actually hack the enemy. And that later grows into the boss. And yeah, that boss has like an 8x8 grid, making things even more complicated. It can do things like send earthquake shockwaves that you have to avoid the floor for, so you have to jump onto pillars that grow from out of the ground and things like that. And yeah, it's just a really, really fun way to beat that boss. I ended up dying twice in that demo. But yeah, I'm really enjoying the kind of tuning that they're putting into it. And again, like, I can't say enough good things about the way it's previewing so far. You know, I don't want to say this is going to be a surefire hit, but, you know, Capcom cannot miss lately, and they've been doing great things since, so I have a lot of confidence in this one. another game that I want to highlight is Hyper Yuki Snowboard Syndicate. This one is being published by Acclaim. The developer is a small studio called Wabi Sabi Design. And the cool thing about this one is that while they don't have any traceable experience to making sports or extreme sports games, this game, like, totally copies SSX, Tricky in all the best ways. When I played it at Day of the Devs, it totally felt like SSX. All of the combos and ways to use your board, the grinding, all of it felt similar. I needed no onboarding point, and it just felt good. The one thing that I can't talk about, just because, like, you know, I was there in a public setting and the sound wasn't all that loud, I don't know if it has the musical component to really have the same vibe, but as far as controls alone and just level design, it really has it. It really feels like Jet Set Radio Future combined with SSX in all the best ways, and I'm really excited to see more of that eventually with it, as we see more. I've also played Bubsy 4D, which I mentioned earlier. Kayla actually previewed the game during Steam Next Fest last year. And for those of you unfamiliar, yeah, most of the Bubsy games suck. This one looks like it's going to be different because it's being developed by Fabraz. Fabraz is the folks who developed Demon Tides, and Demon Tides is excellent. And this one has a lot of the same DNA. The level design is similar, the character design is similar, and, you know, as for Bubsy, like, you know, he's one of the most self-aware mascots there are. Like, this team knows the other Bubsy games suck. Bubsy knows his other adventures suck. And when he talks to other people, like, they are not acknowledging him like any sort of legend the way you would Mario in any sort of way. So I'm really enjoying that aspect of it. The game does break the fourth wall quite a bit with the jokes, and I've enjoyed that as well. But yeah, like the reason why this game, you know, I've been saying this a lot, has the sauce to me, is just because of the way you can actually use Bubsy. So yeah, you know, you have your typical run around, jump around, but you know, Bubsy has both a double jump. He also has a pounce that he can use to sort of go at walls and climb them. It's very much the same way you use Cat Mario in Super Mario 3D World. And he can also turn into a fur ball and just roll around places like that. And the game sort of feels like, you know, I don't really want to say Sonic, but definitely something else in regards to all the rolling action. And I really enjoyed that about that as well. So, yeah, Bubsy is going to look awesome. We also have another appointment with it during PAX East, so I'm looking forward to getting ahead of that. I also play Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Empire City. This one is a VR game. And mind you, like, you know, I do have my appreciation for VR, but I haven't played a VR game in forever. This is being developed by Cortopia Studios. And before we played it, you know, I had a little talk with them to, you know, see what the vibes were. And, you know, for some reason or another, like, Ninja Turtles should be, like, one of the, in my opinion anyway, like, one of the easiest games to, like, develop for. All you gotta do is just have a combat system that's fun and stuff like that. And whenever I play a modern-day Turtles game, it's always hit or miss. Like, you know, I've played Mutants in Manhattan. That game absolutely sucks. I would not recommend that to anybody. I've played Shredder's Revenge, which is absolutely awesome. Like, you know, Tribute Games has done a great job sort of giving it the side-scroller action game feel. This one, I think, is pretty awesome. Again, it's in VR, so it's something that I had to get used to for a little bit. I played a 30-minute demo, and 10 minutes in, I had to take a bit of a rest just because of how stressful it was for me visually and with my headspace the way it was going. But yeah, so the demo started within the sewer lair that they live in New York, and it was cool just vibing around. You know, there's pizza all over the ground. Master Splinter is in his dojo. You can see Raphael and Donatello just chilling in the lounge. April O'Neil is over at the counter looking at some blueprints and doing some, you know, typical journalism stuff that she's known for. I really enjoyed the art style that they have here. They seem to really be embodying some of the more modern comics with their darker look. And I was able to interact with, you know, a bunch of the things underground. I was using Leonardo at the time, so when you reach back behind your back, all of a sudden you'll grab his dual to katanas. You can change turtles whenever you want. And then eventually we went outside to like a just an action-based level. And yeah, we explored New York a little bit, and that's where I ran into some more trouble. One of the main things that you can do that was a little bit difficult for me was climbing anything, you know, much like you would in Zelda, except here you have to actually like go through the act of climbing with your arms, which could be a little bit difficult, you know, especially if you're not used to seeing things in that perspective. At the time, I also switched to Donatello, so when it came to actually fight some foot soldiers, I don't know if what I was doing was actually working, because you have the option of holding the stick with either both hands or one hand, and I don't know if I was actually doing any sort of damage. In the meantime, my partner was using Raph and just killing dudes with his I don't know what his blades are called, the fork things. And yeah, it was pretty fun to see. And you know, this game is something that I do want to play eventually, but I don't have like a MetaQuest or a PC that'll run that kind of stuff, so I don't know how that'll work out in the future, but that's definitely one I have my radar on. And then moving on, I do want to talk about my most favorite demo of the whole event, and I haven't written the preview for it yet. It's for Tire Boy. If you've watched any of the Day of the Devs presentations over the last year, you probably saw Tire Boy. I forget whether it was Summer Game Fest or the Game Awards last year, but it was during one of those Day of the Devs press conferences where I saw it. And yeah, like it's so weird. It totally vibes with me. Basically, you play as this tire that has arms and legs. He lives in a civilization where there are just other weird looking things that don't really look like humans but act like them. In addition to running around and actually fighting other creatures, you can also roll. And it kind of feels like Sonic in that regard, because, you know, as when you roll, you're a tire, you're rolling. And the fun thing here is you can jump really, really high. Like, you can jump, like, you know, two stories high, absolutely nowhere for no reason at all. And the demo was timed. It was like a 15-minute demo for us to just, you know, do a whole bunch of random tasks. And yeah, I enjoyed that sandbox and just being able to do stuff there. I think the game is slated for a release next year, but yeah, like from what I've played, I could definitely deal with some more. But yeah, again, I played, you know, 30 games during GDC, so definitely check out the previews we have up. Adriana also helped out by writing some previews for a game called Worming from Home, where you actually use a worm to work from home, as well as there's one coming out tomorrow for where you use this giraffe who has anxiety, and you have to solve all sorts of puzzles. So that's gonna be coming out tomorrow. But yeah, we definitely will have more coming out in the next few days. But yeah, keep it locked on to Smash Pet for the GDC stuff. And that's about it for me.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news. We had a decent bit of hardware news as the firmware update news, I guess, because the Switch 2 got a big update that adds a bunch of stuff. But probably the highlight there is that it added a thing they called a handheld mode boost, so that Nintendo Switch 1 software can run as if it was docked on a Switch 2. If you're playing in handheld mode on a Switch 2, you can play Switch 1 games like they were docked, so you get the increased fidelity, frame rate boost, whatever things that the it improves when it's docked.
Mm-hmm.
In the process, you lose touchscreen stuff, anything that allows like that in just the handheld mode. So, you know, puzzle games that might be better with touch controls and whatnot, you lose that stuff. I think the gyro would still work, because I assume that's something you would still be able to do if you had the Joy-Cons off and all that. So,
yeah.
I've not had a chance to use this because I don't play my Switch 2 much in handheld mode, much as well as the Switch 1. So there's not a ton here that I would get out of it versus just playing it in docked like I normally do for most things.
Same, oddly enough. I don't really use it handheld basically at all, really.
But I've seen a bunch of people that primarily play handheld be like, oh my god, this changes so much. None of these games look like shit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like Xenoblade Chronicles and that kind of stuff that has always been a bit rough. But as you get with this, as you might expect, the battery situation's a bit worse running it in this mode, because you're running it like it's going to be plugged in at all times in a dock, but not. So you're going to definitely run down your battery a little bit faster each time. So that's maybe the one knock with that, but otherwise you're going to be able to play some of these games running a good bit better than they did originally.
So I haven't actually tried this yet. Like, are there any things that you would say is like an immediate upgrade over it? I know you mentioned the battery life sucks more, but I was wondering if there's like something that definitely benefits.
It's a lot of like increased resolution, since the handheld mode would be 720p, and you would, I assume, be able to do 1080p in handheld mode with this boost. Maybe frame rate would be better, like some things like that. Depending on the game, of course, the ones that run differently on docked and handheld mode on the Switch one. With that, and a lot of that stuff is like the Xenoblade Chronicles games. I think the Zelda games often do that. So yeah,
is there a button you have to press in order to make that happen?
I assume it's an option in the settings somewhere. Yeah, as I say here, to Nintendo Switch software handling in system. So that would be under the system settings stuff. So there's that. The other thing they added here is you can add notes to people on your friends list. So if you need to know like who the fuck these people are, or maybe what games you would play with them, things like that. It seems like you can do that, and you'll be able to see and edit those on the Switch app on your phone as well. I think that works across both Switch and Switch 2. I'm going to see what else is on here of note. It seems like they added breakdown of your storage capacity by data type for the system memory and microSD Express card. So if you want to see like where you got the space and like how it's being used when you're trying to free up space, that seems like it should make it a little easier on that front. And that's some nice stuff to add to this, which is nice. been so long since Nintendo's added any like quality features on a firmware update basis in a long time, so nice to do it anything. So there's that. And the other big Nintendo news of the week is that they finally put out Pokemon XD, Gale of Darkness. We knew it was going to come out this month at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it out this past week for the GameCube app. I played a bit of this and realized that how different it is from your average Pokemon RPG.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not, you know, a kid that's just getting into becoming a trainer and like picking a starter Pokemon. You get an EV forced upon you.
Mm-hmm.
So early on, you find a guy that's nice to you and offers you one of the stones to evolve the Eevee into one of the, I think, the five different forms that it has. For that, so you can get the water, the electric, the fire, like dark and light. I forget the other two are. You can kind of make your choice there. But otherwise, the story is that there are these shadow Pokemon that bad guys have, or whoever has them, and you get a gadget that lets you essentially capture them from other trainers.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point you have to use them, take them around with you, and eventually you wear down this heart meter that allows you to eventually purify them, and then they, you know, become a regular ass Pokemon and can be used as such.
Mm-hmm.
So they can shadow form. They have different moves, specifically like shadow moves that they can use for that. But yeah, once they become normal again, then they have regular moves, and you can get all the XP you miss, because they don't get XP from battles in the process. So it's like a neat idea for a thing to change up here. So that was neat to check out, but it also is very early 2000s ass GameCube game, because the art style is very different from any of the other, like what the modern 3D Pokemon games look like. So you got like a kid who's very skinny with floppy hair and all this weird looking stuff on him. It's like very like 2003, 2004 ass GameCube character design. So
yep.
Yeah, the GameCube didn't have very many RPGs. Like, I'm convinced, like, that's why people think games like, well, okay, I think Tales of Symphonia is actually good, but I'm also convinced, like, that's why people think, like, both Bat and Kaito's games are otherworldly, which they're not. They're just average JRPGs to me. And Pokemon XD Gale of Darkness is pretty much in the same boat. This game pretty much, like, gets credit because it is one of the few Pokemon adventures you can have outside of a handheld. And Pokemon Colosseum, like, did a lot of the same stuff. And in fact, Pokemon XD, like, takes a lot of the same assets and reuses some of the same territories that Colosseum did. So as a result, like, it was, you know, a little bit awkward in that regard. You know, I'm going to stop from saying it was bad, because, like, it is a playable game. You know, if you wanted to play it from beginning to end and enjoy it, you totally can. But in my opinion, like, this is more of a nostalgia trip for people that wanted to, you know, either get this game because they didn't have an opportunity to, which I was sort of one of them, but I also borrowed it from a friend. And the other thing is, if you wanted the original game, it's like $250, which, no, so.
Yeah. From what it says here, this is the same developer as for both of those games. So that's why they carry over a lot of stuff. Is that in the same area, I think, as well? Aura? Whatever that is, however that's pronounced. But yeah, this was sort of an interesting game to play, like, in the GBA era of Pokemon stuff. But I did find it funny, the opening cutscene, where you just see this, like, Shadow Lugia just swoop up and just steal this cruiser boat out of the water, and it was like, what the hell happened? I don't know. Maybe it got lost. You know, like, I don't know, this fucking Pokemon swooped down and somehow picked this giant boat up and stole it. There's also a crazy doctor you find early on who makes the worst inventions, but he has a hype guy that's like, these are the greatest inventions ever.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a sandal with a bunch of shit on the sole, so it ruins your feet. Or like a fridge that only turns on when you open the door. It's presented as a power saving. It's like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. And it's like, it only works when your door is open. I was like, oh. And he admits, like, yeah, so all your food goes bad. So, yeah. It's got some character in there. But it's not as good as the other handheld games. So where's that? It says here the average review score was like 66%. So most people didn't think it was that amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can check that out for yourself and save $250
mm-hmm.
in the process. But yeah, as for other firmware update news, the PlayStation Portal got a big update
mm-hmm.
that adds a new 1080p high quality streaming mode.
Yep.
Which is a higher bit rate. It essentially should allow games to stream more data into you, look and run a little bit better than they do in the regular 1080p mode.
Mm-hmm.
For that, they also they make it easier for like trilogy bundles and such to launch into the game that you want out of them. They have a prompt for that so that you don't launch into the wrong thing, which is good. And yeah, the thing I noticed when I was using mine the other day is that they enhanced the trophies. Before you would just get a notification like bronze trophy earned. Like, okay, mm-hmm. what is it? Never show you the title or anything like that. I think it's still the case that you can't look at the trophy list for games.
Mm.
So like there's some games that I would love to play on my portal in bed, but without knowing the trophy list, I don't want to fucking bother for some of them, because they're be like Power Wash Simulator 2 that has specific things you need to do in jobs. So I was like, well, if I can't do that, then know exactly what I'm getting into, then there's no point. But I was playing a game the other day and like unlocked a couple, like at the beginning of the game I was playing, unlocked a couple at the same time and it popped them all up on the screen in a bit of a weird way. Like on a regular PS5, you would just have them pop up one at a time. It like puts them side by side in a way that's like pretty funny to see when I do multiple trophies at once. So it does that now, and I guess also has the little animation you get when you're in a platinum. Now shows yeah. up on there, so
mm-hmm.
That's good. Yeah, that seems like a lot of what this update adds, but some nice stuff for that. So there you go.
All right.
But yeah, let's get to some announcements for dates. This one here, Easy Delivery Company, is coming to PS5, Xbox, Switch, and mobile on March 26th. Later this week. I've talked about this because I played the PC version. That is a really nice, chill kind of driving game. It's set in like a quiet mountain town that has a very kind of Silent Hill-ish, kind of foggy, snowy look to it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see people really around on any of the streets or anything. So it just kind of gives this very odd feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not really reciprocated on in anything actually happening. So I think I had a bug where my truck, when I came back out of a building, it just did a donut for some reason. And I think I was just a bug and not it being spooky.
Mm-hmm.
But it could also just be spooky, I don't know. But mm-hmm. that's a fun little game. You basically just go into these different little businesses or whatever and pick up stuff for jobs to deliver. You put them in the back of your truck. And then go along and drive, and it's kind of the thing is that your map is kind of shitty,
mm-hmm.
And trying to figure out how to get around. But as you get around, you kind of figure out the path with it. You do see some signs for locations to go. But yeah, that's kind of game it is. So pretty neat, and one worth checking out. So that'll be out later this week on the consoles and mobile. It's got a very nice like GameCube or N64-esque Animal Crossing kind of style to it,
mm-hmm.
Which is nice. Let's see, next up here, Shinobi Art of Vengeance is getting DLC. Particularly, I think it's adding 5 new stages inspired by Sega franchises, 2 new boss rush modes, 3 new ninpo, 3 new outfits, 6 new music tracks, and 3 of the bosses that will be in this DLC is Dr. Eggman,
mm-hmm.
Death Adder from Golden Axe, yep. and Goro Majima from Like a Dragon.
Of course.
So yeah, you get those fun little bosses in the game, which is probably a big reference to, like, was it Revenge of Shinobi 3?
Mm-hmm.
Where they had quote-unquote licensed bosses in the game.
Yeah. Quote-unquote, unquote.
Yeah, just having Shinobi fight Spider-Man is badass. They should actually do that.
Yeah.
But either way, like, I want to see how they do this contextually. I don't know if the copy that Sony, that Sega gave us has these for free, but I'm down to try them out.
Yeah. There's also a free update that'll add a hardcore mode and make some adjustments to various things. And it's but if you have the digital deluxe edition, that includes this DLC. Otherwise, it's $10. And I believe this game is on sale, so if you want to check out the game, the demo's probably still available. And the game's on sale as well, so if you enjoy it, check it out. Heard a lot of good things, so I might check it out. So there you go. That's next week.
Yeah, Shinobi's amazing. It was in my top 10 last year.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are not amazing, Starfield is coming to play at PS5 on April 7th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alongside a new update and new DLC. Let me see here. Yeah, it includes all the updates, including the upcoming Free Lanes update. I'm not sure what that update includes, but yeah, there's also a new DLC that is called, I think, Terran Armada.
Mm-hmm.
Story DLC, so some story missions. Also gets you the $70 edition is the premium edition. It's $50 for the regular edition. You get 1,000 creation credits for the creation club for all the fun stuff there. Skin pack, digital art book, and original soundtrack for the deluxe edition. Or you can buy the upgrade for the premium version for $25 for that. So PS5 people will be able to check it out. And from what I last saw, people are buying the pre-orders for this. Probably more because it's the next Bethesda big RPG that they can get.
Yep.
But as somebody that's put 40 hours into it, I'm like, it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
It does not really change much of the issues that Skyrim had, which is a lot of repeated content areas you kind of went through.
Yep.
That's still a big issue. I've gone through, like, one of those labs, like, 3 times before I was, like, everything was exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the enemies got around a little bit more, but other than that, like, the same stuff was in the same areas.
Mm.
So, yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, I've never played this game.
You'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's apparently designed to be replayed a bunch. And I never got through one playthrough because I was so bored at a certain point. I basically looted as much as I could, and you can kind of do that, but the ship only has so much storage for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally have to haul as much stuff as I could to merchants, and there are limited amounts of merchants that'll buy stuff. I would basically clean them out of money, haul my ass back to the ship, and try to figure out a way to buy more storage for the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Which would never really work, and I just eventually got bored of that. You do get a house at some point, but it's also rough to kind of just keep running back and forth.
Yeah.
It's one of those kind of games.
We'll see how it ends up.
Yeah.
We did not review Starfield when it came out, and obviously it looks like there are reasons. But yeah, like, Xbox is starting to send us stuff. That's why we actually have a review. What was that? Oblivion. Or not Oblivion. What was that RPG that just came out on PS5 that was...
Oh, Avowed?
Avowed, yes. That is why we have an Avowed review up for the PS5 version. So that same guy volunteered for Starfield if we get it. So, yeah, you guys can look forward to that, but I'm not playing it, so...
Yeah, I would say Avowed is a much better game.
Oh, yeah.
Starfield. Like, actually fun combat and all that. Yeah. Let's see, on April 9th, this is, I think, 2 weeks out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Thursday after next will be the Triple I Initiative 2026 showcase.
Mm-hmm.
That they are having, let's see, 9 o'clock Pacific time, noon Eastern time, 45 minutes of announcements. The team that made 1000X Resist has said that they are going to announce something here. I assume that's going to be a new game. Let's see, Devolver Digital, Clay, Tiny Build will be there. Castlevania Belmont's Curse will be there. Dead as Disco. I assume some new content for Risk of Rain 2. Windrose. Helka Hest. So that'll be neat to see. These ones usually have a lot of good stuff. So they do mention 8 world premieres, gameplay reveals, and release dates. So should be good.
Yeah, the AAA events are normally really good. They're just a little long. But at the same time, like, again, a lot of good games are typically shown here. So I'm looking forward to this. I'll be traveling when this game, or not when this game, when this event happens. But I'll look forward to seeing announcements.
Yep, there's that. See, April 21st, Vampire Crawlers, the Turbo Wild Card from Vampire Survivors will be out.
Mm-hmm.
On everything. PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. Mobile will be a bit later.
Yeah.
But I am excited for this. They say $10 here for the game. It seems pretty fair for what the demo shows.
Mm-hmm.
Offer this because basically what they've done here is taken the core world and all that for Vampire Survivors and made it into kind of a dungeon crawling deck builder kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
So you're exploring these environments in a very kind of dungeon crawling, like a first person, like turn based dungeon crawling kind of thing. So based on how you're looking around, you can find like extra things to break in the environment for additional gold or whatever. Chests and all that kind of stuff. But you run around to enemies that get into fights with and do all that fun stuff. And yeah, the demo made it seem like a pretty fun time. Especially because you're going back to your base and unlocking new characters in a very similar way to Vampire Survivors and all that, complete with a bunch of like little challenge goals to complete to unlock new cards and characters and all that kind of stuff. So
mm-hmm.
That seems like that should be pretty fun. So there's that. Let's see what else we got here. May 22nd, Lego Batman Legacy of the Dark Knight is moving up a week. Mm-hmm. So it was May 29th. Now it's going to be May 22nd. So people won't have to wait an extra week for that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be about 2 months. So that's good to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that looks good. And the last date I have here is this this game called Sound System, supposedly a next generation rhythm game,
mm-hmm.
Made by a bunch of people that worked on Guitar Hero, Rock Band, and DJ Hero.
Mm-hmm.
Games. It'll be in early access on PC on October 16th. Full launch when it's 1.0 will be on PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Probably at least in 2027, if not later. Seems like the big thing they have here is that there's more focus on creator tools so that you can make your own music, maybe at let me see what else it says here. Yeah, you can also make your own performance spaces with a bunch of customization options. Yeah, you have full control over your note highways, wide selection of static and FMV backgrounds, customized scoring widgets, a piece of visual themes and bundles. I don't know if that's gonna be like DLC stuff or what, but they mentioned there's going to be 50 plus songs in the base game. So they describe it as mixing legendary covers, established indie artists, and rising new bands. So hearing about covers instead of masters kind of seems like maybe not going to be great for the bigger name stuff in there.
Yeah.
But I have local and online multiplayer stuff, co-op band stuff. Yeah, head-to-head competitive modes. Other kind of stuff, so that seems interesting. Yeah, I keep mentioning here, core songs from indie and emerging artists are always free. Studio covers at 99 cents and endless DLC from new and established bands. So it seems like they're not going hard on being like, we're going to get AC/DC and Metallica and all this big name stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more focused on the indie bands.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they have a classic mode, which essentially has no fail built into it. So your new and casual players can just kind of play and not worry about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As a pro mode, It has DDR-style scoring. And this is also, you miss a total of 11 notes and it's game over. And hardcore mode that you can't miss even one note. So, that sounds neat. I don't know if they're going to be make a, you know, a game that really holds up to, like, Rock Band 4 or any of that stuff, but we'll have to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks neat. So yeah, that's our dates. We got a couple games here that get announced. Devolver Digital's studio Doinksoft has announced a new game they're working on called Dark Scrolls. It's out later this year.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to PC and a Switch. This is the developer that did Gunbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And got a Roboto.
Yep.
They bought them a few years ago. So, this is their new game. They describe it as a side-scrolling action platformer.
Mm-hmm.
Using shoot-em-up style chaos with roguelite progression. So, could be neat. Yeah, got a nice style to it from the screenshots they show here. Let's see, we got Minecraft Dungeons 2 was announced.
Mm-hmm.
PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, Switch, and PC. It's out later this year. I sure hope it's better than the first game, because the first game was kind of a snooze fest as a Diablo clone.
Yeah.
The loot was never really all that interesting. The action was never really all that interesting and all that. I'd be willing to check this out if it is actually better.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the same devs from the first game, Mojang and Double 11, working on this, so we'll see where that one goes. And then our last story or announcement here is Digimon Story Time Strangers getting a big expansion next year, 2027. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they had a Digimon little event last night, and this is sort of the biggest news there outside of a mobile game. That'll be a way to monetize the Digimon community. This seems like they're doing a big expansion for the most recent game that will add a bunch of stuff to it, so. That looks neat. But yeah, that's kind of it for the announcements. So, Brandon, what of these announcements and dates interests you?
Honestly, not really any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, just... Yeah, no, not really.
All right, how about you, Dinner?
Yeah, two, actually. For me, it's Lego Batman. You know, a lot of people are really excited for this one just because it goes through a whole lot more than just like one part of the series. And I'm really interested in seeing how it evolves from a gameplay standpoint, because, like, you know, these Lego games aren't new and it's getting a lot of hype. And I want to see if it actually like amounts to that hype, because I've played a lot of these Lego games before and they're great. But I don't know if they're like amounting to the hype it's currently getting. And then the other one is Sound System. You know, I've always been a fan of those Guitar Hero-ish games in general, and I'm interested in seeing how it plays, but we'll see how it goes. Other than that, not too much here that's for me. I know Vampire Crawlers is something that one of our staffers, David, really wants to get into, but that's not... Yeah, these are cool dates.
Yep. All right. So, we got more industry news here, and first up is a huge surprise that IOI's publishing deal with Build a Rocket Boy for Mind's Eye has ended.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they did not seem to want to renew it and continue on.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge surprise to everybody in the industry. So, you know, as they hear, Build a Rocket Boy will assume sole publishing responsibilities going forward,
mm-hmm.
ensuring continuity for the Mind's Eye community and all partners. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the planned Hitman crossover events is not going to happen. But Barb says they'll still intend on collaborating with other partners in the future?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, they are bound and determined to make this game work.
apparently they had a big update recently. It was going to be the one that changes things for the game, and I think they doubled their concurrent mm-hmm. users from 20 to 40 on Steam.
Yeah.
I don't think they have the winning formula yet.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as their execs are continually going off about the corporate sabotage that they have absolute proof for, that they're starting to sound like the MyPillow guy.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, that he has proof for this, and then but never shows it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's Unsurprising. It's been a year since the game came out, I think. Say March 16th. This is when the... I assume it was a year from... I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It ended. Nobody's surprised. The game bombed and probably ended IOI's publishing aspirations for a long time, if forever, if not forever. So
mm-hmm.
There you go. But yeah, let's get to some bad news. Crystal Dynamics has laid off 20 employees
mm-hmm.
in their fourth wave of layoffs in the last year or so. They announced on LinkedIn that the cut staff members were split between some development personnel and some central operations roles.
Mm-hmm.
As our current projects move into new phases of development, we continuously take a hard look at our team structures to ensure they align with our long-term studio goals. While we always strive to transition our people into new roles whenever possible, we have unfortunately reached a point where these departures are necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a bit concerning considering they are working on two big games. They're working on Legacy of Atlantis, a remake of the first one,
mm-hmm.
And Catalyst, the new entry that's coming out next year. And so you typically don't lay off people, especially four times, for games that you are going to be building up to getting out in the near future. They are owned by the Embracer Studio, and it seems like they are continually trying to cut costs at some point. So unfortunately, they are laying off more people.
Yeah.
I have a friend who was on the writing staff for that team, was laid off, and then got brought back on. Pretty sure she's still safe, but at the same time, I'm numb to it.
I do wonder if they do the layoff and rehire so they can lower their seniority and
take away benefits or whatever. And,
yeah. there's that. And speaking of layoffs, Ubisoft laid off 105 people.
Mm-hmm.
At Red Storm Entertainment, as they are essentially ending game development at the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Red Storm is sort of probably one of the most storied studios that Ubisoft has. They've been working on games for 30 years now, since 1996 when it was founded. Mm-hmm. Especially on Tom Clancy games, mostly Ghost Recon. But I think they worked on some of those early Rainbow Six games as well. They say they will permanently shift the North Carolina studio to behind-the-scenes support work, such as engine support for the Snowdrop engine and other duties like IT and customer relations. The 105 people will be losing their jobs as a result. And yeah, that is just sad. They have not shipped a game since, I'm not sure which one of these... Werewolves Within and Star Trek Bridge Crew. I think Bridge Crew is probably the one that is their most recent one. That seems like that's 2017. They were working on Assassin's Creed Nexus VR that was canceled. Or no, that was shipped. Okay, they were working on Splinter Cell VR game that was canceled in 2022. And then we're working on The Division Heartland, a sort of free-to-play game in The Division series that was canceled 2 years ago. Essentially with no development prospects, as far as anything getting picked up to be worked on, it seems like they have decided to lay off most of the studio and move it to be a support studio,
mm-hmm.
Which is a shame. It's unfortunate. Sad to see, but Ubisoft keeps... making some cuts here and there, so
mm-hmm.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure like the last year and a half, pretty much we've had a story about a major studio laying off a bunch of people, basically every single show. And unfortunately, I don't see this stopping anytime soon. But honestly, the fact that they're laying off Red Storm. That is who we're talking about right now, right? Red Storm?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a much bigger and more major thing than people realize, because Red Storm were basically the guys that were... Like, Red Storm itself, that studio, was basically co-founded by Tom Clancy. At the very least, they were the ones who essentially got all... He sort of... Yeah, it was him. He co-founded it with Doug Littlejohns. And like that studio's been going since like 1996. So like almost 30 years. And like yeah, they were basically the ground zero for all of the Tom Clancy stuff that Ubisoft put out then from Rainbow Six to Ghost Recon, the sort of some of the other stuff that they did, Shadow Watch, stuff like that. And
Tom Clancy's Ruthless.com.
yep,
Apparently a thing they made in 1998.
yeah, their first Tom Clancy game was Tom Clancy's Politica. That was in 1997. And they also have sort of a special place in my heart because they were also involved in the development of the if I can find it here, it should be on here somewhere. See, da, 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 da. It's on here somewhere. I got the Wikipedia page pulled up. I wanted to mention it because it was kind of a big deal, at least for me. They were one of the people who helped develop the that guitar teaching game that I played a bunch that helped me learn the instrument. Rocksmith. They actually did a bunch of work on Rocksmith. And yeah, it's a shame, man. And it's unfortunate because I mean Ubisoft is kind of responsible for essentially ramming that entire license into the ground. And Red Storm were the ones that had to date the games because Ubisoft was their boss. And it just kind of sucks.
Yeah. Sad to see studio that really was able to celebrate their 30th anniversary getting shut down like this. Not shut down, they're still gonna exist, but not as what they were. So yeah. Let's see, we got some other news. Remember us talking about the Krafton lawsuit with the Unknown Worlds founders? That was going a lot of places last year. But we have the conclusion, at least right now. Krafton has lost this lawsuit. The Delaware Vice Chancellor Lori Will has issued a decision in the lawsuit filed by Charlie Cleveland, Max McGuire, and Ted Gill against Krafton. The decision, let me see here. Krafton has been ordered to restore Gill as the CEO of Unknown Worlds with full operational authority. Gives him final say on the release date of Subnautica 2. The $250 million bonus will be reinstated as a potential thing. And I believe they say here that it's been extended by the same period of Gil's time away from Unknown Worlds. So they only reinstate Ted Gill as CEO of Unknown Worlds and not the other two, because that is the authority that the judge has here, which I assume also means that they will get hired on by the CEO at some point once that is, good to do. Or actually, she has not ordered the company to rehire Cleveland and McGuire in their peripheral roles. She also declined to state if Krafton's actions wrongfully impaired the earnout or if any resulting damages are owed. That'll be decided in the second phase of litigation. Krafton has said that they respectfully disagree with today's ruling. They're evaluating their options for their path forward, saying today's ruling does not resolve the former executive's claim for damages or an earnout related to Subnautica 2, with further litigation still pending. In the meantime, Krafton's immediate focus remains unchanged: to learn the best possible game to Subnautica's fans. They're still trying to be like, oh, we care about this more than these guys do. And all that. So, yeah. Part of this, that was discovered is that, Krafton CEO Changin Kim felt that Krafton had overpaid for Unknown Worlds. Because they bought them like in the height of the pandemic, I think in 2021, for I think $500 million, and then had the bonus for $250 million to add to the value of the deal. In May 2025, Kim began his campaign to delay Subnautica 2, complaining that the planned payout was a bad deal that he felt taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. His pushback from Park, who informed him that it would be better. Proceed with the planned early access release. She warned Kim that because the game's build was not in such a bad shape, this would become a debatable issue in potential litigation. Undeterred, Kim turned to generative AI tool ChatGPT for advice on how to proceed. I think Park is the lawyer here, so shirking the lawyer's recommendations, turned to ChatGPT. He took the large language model's generated responses, actionable advice, forming a task force named Project X. Crafted its decision to follow the advice of a generative AI tool led to a ChatGPT-generated key summary of responses, became the foundation of Crafton's plan for fully taking over Unknown Worlds. The summary stated Crafton could accomplish its goals by preparing preemptive framing around projecting product quality and fan trust, securing control points by locking down publishing rights on Steam and consoles, and preparing quote-unquote systemic materials for legal defense. Ironically, later in 2025, Crafton would declare itself an AI-first company in order to deliver differentiated user device experiences and drive innovation across all services. I believe that was the thing the judge hammered them on, is this ChatGPT bullshit, and shirking the lawyer's recommendations. Or this person is a head of corporate development, so yeah, I had no problems with the revised roles for the for Charlie and Charlie Cleveland and McGuire. So yeah, this basically Crafton got told to stop what they're doing and rehire this person and reinstate the bonus potential and all that. And it seems like in response, Crafton has essentially leaked the potential release date for Subnautica 2, which they were legally told by the judge not to do so, not to interfere with the release date or anything.
Because that's just incredibly petty.
Yeah. So lawyers for the trio have accused Crafton of intentionally leaking a memo about aiming to launch Subnautica 2 in early access in May. This is one day. Former Unknown World Steve Popotsis announced the date one day after the judgment demanded the immediate reinstatement of Ted Gill. His reemployment terms included regaining control of Subnautica 2's early access release and an extension of the conditions for him and his team to secure a $250 million bonus. So yeah, the lawyers accused Crafton of ignoring the judgment and allowing him to announce the release date in a leaked memo. Yeah. So great things are happening, and that may end up leading to probably bringing this back up to the judge and being like, these guys broke the judgment you handed down. Maybe get them in some more legal trouble. We'll know. At some point, but I'm assuming their lawyers are licking their chops at the potential of what they can do here. So there you go. More fun out of Crafton.
Yeah. Man, I am greatly anticipating the awesome article that Jason Schreier is going to write about this at some point. Because holy shit, this is like book length shit.
Yeah.
It's been rather fun seeing everything that's been happening between these two. You know, obviously, like, a lot of the stuff that's happened to Unknown Worlds has been super unjust, you know, allegedly. But at the same time, like, reading stories about Crafton execs all of a sudden going to ChatGPT, asking what they should do to alleviate some of their pain is just absolutely hilarious stuff. And, you know, having the CEO, you know, reinstated is great. So hopefully this leads to cool things along the way, and it shows that, you know, execs that don't know what they're doing should not be in charge of things that they have, you know, no credence for. So we'll see what happens, and I'm wishing Unknown Worlds all the best. I am taking their side here.
Yeah, I will end here on the What has been a disastrous announcement of NVIDIA's new DLSS 5 tech.
Mm-hmm.
They had this reveal here showing off these sort of enhancements that it can do based on some of its first images here. One of them showing off Grace from Resident Evil Requiem.
Yeah.
That kicked off 1,000 memes.
Mm-hmm.
Showing the regular version of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It was just labeled DLSS 5 off and DLSS 5 on, showing like an enhanced version of it. That looks like it's run through your typical AI slop filter.
It's, yeah, like it's like it's not even the same character anymore.
Yeah, she's got like roots in her hair. Mm-hmm. Her hair isn't like the whitish blonde kind of look. She's got like makeup on and lip filler and all this, and you're just like, this is not even the character model that devs made.
Mm-hmm.
For this game. And it seems like from talk of it, that's the devs weren't really involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the Capcom corporate was involved in this, but it seems like devs are pretty mad about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to be using AI shit, and having corporate involved in this means they may end up getting forced to deal with this shit. But yeah, Starfield was the other one that was featured in this. But you can see the similar kind of thing where it's like a character that looks like, you know, a video game character. But the DLSS version adds like gray hairs in her hair and, you know, makeup and all this extra detail that is trying to make it look more realistic and high fidelity kind of stuff. But if you've seen, you know, AI generated images, especially ones that people take of, you know, video game characters and ask it to enhance, this looks exactly like that. In a way that just looks real bad. They say this thing is going to be available this fall. The version that they're showing off requires two RTX 5090 cards to get, which is way overkill and will obviously improve by the time it does launch. But yeah, nobody is really anticipating having to have, you know, $2,000 cards for all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'll have more games supporting it, like Assassin's Creed Shadows and Hogwarts Legacy, and what else here? Phantom Blade Zero, Sea of Remnants, Starfield, Elder Scrolls 4, Oblivion Remastered, Where Winds Meet, more games. But yeah, they include some of the memes here, some of which is like the classic portrait of Jesus that got, you know, fixed up and looked way worse. And all that. I think the funniest one I saw involved the DLSS off was classic Aunt Viv from Fresh Prince, and DLSS on was the woman that replaced her.
Mm-hmm.
For the last couple seasons. So I was like, all right, this is some good joke stuff. But yeah, the first group that stepped up to defend this was Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
Being one of the major studios involved in presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Yeah, Bethesda Game Studios seemed like they responded on social media, which is their first mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, appreciate your excitement and analysis of the new DLSS 5 lighting here. This is a very early look, and our teams will be further adjusting the lighting and final effect to look the way we think works best for each game. This will all be under our artist control and totally optional for players.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably true to a degree. Like, the information we've gotten from NVIDIA has been like, you know, the devs have all the controls for this stuff. It'll be optional and all that. It's like, yeah, but you're also advertising this thing that just objectively looks like shit. Like, you have taken the control out of the devs and say, like, oh, this looks much better, this classified version of these characters. And especially, like, looking at a lot of the lighting for a lot of these areas that you're seeing and seeing how much that changes for some of this stuff. I think there's one of Starfield that features a character that has, like, a ball cap on. And in the regular shot, you know, he's got shade on his face because the cap is, you know, keeping his face in shade. And in the DLSS on version, just looks like he took a selfie with the highest flash possible. Just blows up light all over his face, and you're like, how do you put out these shots and not realize how stupid this looks? And it's probably because that's what it can do right now. But yeah, most of these things just look pretty bad for the most part. At worst, it looks not good, but at best, it just looks really bad and kind of disingenuous the way they're kind of talking about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So then CEO Jensen Huang got out there and said, let me see here, saying, yeah, they're completely wrong. You can fine-tune the generative AI to your artistic style. If you want cartoon, toon shader, made of glass, it's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, saying it's not post-processing at the frame level. It's generative control at the geometry level. It's very different than generative AI. It's content-controlled generative AI. So, yeah, it's looking like you have more control over this than people would have thought, because that's not the way DLSS has worked before.
Mm-hmm.
Because before, it essentially allows you to run the game at a lower resolution, like 720p or whatever it is, and essentially uses the data set it has of high-res images, versions of those of that game, to be able to improve the visuals such that you are kind of getting the performance bonus, but getting the visual quality of a higher res version of the game without much of a performance hit to it, which is kind of where things are going to go for visual improvements for the foreseeable future, because just making a purely more powerful graphics card is going to cost too much at this point, especially with what we've seen with the cost of RAM and all that. Some of these companies are literally making versions of these cards with less RAM on it, because that's just cheaper, a way to keep the cost down. But yeah, they are kind of scrambling to get the messaging on this improved, and that doesn't seem to be going so well, because a marketing specialist at NVIDIA kind of contradicted the CEO with their statement on this. Yeah, let me see where this guy's message is. Yeah, GeForce evangelist, marketing specialist Jacob Friedman said here. This YouTuber asked him if DLSS 5 is effectively taking a single 2D frame as an input with motion vectors to create the output frame. NVIDIA rep's response was yes, DLSS 5 takes a 2D frame plus motion vectors as an input. DLSS 5 is trained in end-to-end to understand complex scene semantics such as characters, hair, fabric, and translucent skin, along with environmental lighting conditions like front-lit, back-lit, or overcast, all by analyzing a single frame. But that contradicts what Jensen Huang was saying, where he said it's not post-processing, it's not post-processing at the frame level, it's generative control at the geometry level, saying it could change the geometry of the characters and whatnot going on around this, which seems like that may be actually the thing that's here, or it's got some sort of control of what's going on here in a way that is changing the way these characters look, and it's even changing details in the background and all that in a way that most people that care about the art of making games does not like. The people that just want a thing that looks, you know, fake high res in this way that this is trying to improve the sort of fidelity of these character models. Some of those people are liking it, but otherwise I think most people are very much like, this just seems disrespectful to the developers with everything that this is doing. So yeah, and of course now people are just arguing what all these terms mean and all that stuff, and I assume this tech will improve by the time it launches, and hopefully it doesn't require, you know, two of the most expensive graphic card out there to run it on a PC. But yeah, this is kind of what's taken over the discourse of the industry right now. is how much a lot of people in the industry and the people that are fans and cover the industry are not liking what this thing is doing. So mm-hmm. it'll be fun to see how NVIDIA pivots to improve this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, kind of your big news for the week.
Yeah, and basically became the fount of memes for the last few days. It ended up looking terrible, and like just nobody, like all, you know, the NVIDIA and Bethesda and are just all like trying to save face here, saying like, no, look, we worked really hard on this, and it's like, it looks like shit, dude.
Yeah.
Like, look, we've already talked about how, you know, how artificial AI slop already looks. And this doesn't help, man. It just further nails home that the whole generative AI thing is complete bullshit.
Yeah. It definitely has some applications here, but this kind of stuff does not look good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a mess. I don't think it looks like shit. You know, it looks a little bit better than that, but at the same time, like, my issue here is, like, putting things on top of the actual art and effort that people made to put into this art. Like, for example, everything that they're showing of the Resident Evil characters, I'm like, you know, they've already worked around all of their, all of their limitations, and that's what makes it great, and at the same time, like, that's what makes it really stylized. By doing this, like, you're making everything look the same, and if not the same, then obviously worse, and, like, that's not what I'm for, especially when you're reading things from, you know, devs at Capcom who obviously will remain anonymous, but at the same time saying that they didn't know about this. They learned about this just as NVIDIA was announcing it, and you're like, why? And at the end of the day, you know why, and that's what sucks about it.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be fun to see where this tech ends up going. But yeah, for now, people are mad and have a right to be mad about this stuff.
Oh yeah.
Hopefully, NVIDIA works out a way to fix it and make it, you know, what they're claiming here, because otherwise, it just seems like something that nobody wants to deal with. So yeah, we'll see how that ends up going. But yeah, that's going to do it for the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
If you enjoy the show, let friends and family know. They should check out the podcast. And yeah, thank you to Brandon Danner for joining this week.
Always.
Let's see what else we got coming out here for the rest of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, we got Ariana and the Elder Codex. That's sort of a action RPG Metroid-y kind of game, I think. Let's see what else here.
Highlights I have on my list are Damon and Baby, Life is Strange Reunion, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, plus Meetup at Bella Bell Park, Screamer, the Mega Man Star Force Legacy Collection. Yep, it's the end of March. Yeah, we're getting a lot of stuff. So. Oh yeah, isn't that Marvel Maximum Collection game coming out this week too? Like that's sudden, right?
Yeah, Life is Strange Reunion is out this week. Let's see, Kena: Bridge of Spirits is coming to Switch too. Virtual Fighter 5 is on Switch too. The Mega Man Star Force Legacy Collection is out. So yeah, bunch of stuff here, and yeah, that'll be an interesting week. Even that Dissidia Duellum Final Fantasy mobile game is coming out this week, so people can get all their another Final Fantasy mobile game that'll shut down in a couple years.
It's interesting, like normally Square Enix shows up to PAX East, and that would be the one thing to show up for, but I guess even they know.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See you guys.